Buffalo Gals, Won't You Come Out Tonight? Chapter 1. You fell out of the sky, the coyote said. Still curled up tight, lying on her side, her back pressed against the overhanging rock, the child watched the coyote with one eye. Over the other eye, she kept her hand cupped, its back on the dirt. There was a burned place in the sky, up there alongside the rim rock, and then you fell out of it. The coyote repeated, patiently, as if the news was getting a bit stale. Are you hurt? She was all right. She was in the plane with Mr. Michaels, and the motor was so loud she couldn't understand what he said, even when he shouted. And the way the wind rocked the wings was making her feel sick, but it was all right. They were flying to Canyonville, in the plane. She looked. The coyote was still sitting there. It yawned. It was a big one, in good condition, its coat silvery and thick. The dark tear line from its long yellow eye was as clearly marked as a tabby cat's. She sat up, slowly, still holding her right hand pressed to her right eye. Did you lose an eye? The coyote asked, interested. I don't know, the child said. She caught her breath and shivered. I'm cold. I'll help you look for it, the coyote said. Come on. If you move around, you won't have to shiver. The sun's up. Cold, lonely brightness lay across the falling land, 100 miles of sagebrush. The coyote was trotting busily around, nosing under clumps of rabbit brush and cheatgrass, pawing at a rock. Aren't you going to look? It said, suddenly sitting down on its haunches and abandoning the search. I knew a trick once where I could throw my eyes way up into a tree and see everything from up there, and then whistle, and they'd come back into my head. But that goddamn blue jay stole them, and when I whistled, nothing came. I had to stick lumps of pine pitch into my head so I could see anything. You could try that. But you've got one eye, that's okay. What do you need two for? Are you coming, or are you dying there? The child crouched, shivering. Well, come if you want to, said the coyote, yawned again, snapped at a flea, stood up, turned, and trotted away among the sparse clumps of rabbit brush and sage, along the long slope that stretched on down and down into the plain streaked across by long shadows of sagebrush. The slender, gray-yellow animal was hard to keep in sight, vanishing as the child watched. She struggled to her feet, and without a word, though she kept saying in her mind, "Wait, please wait," she hobbled after the coyote. She couldn't see it. She kept her hand pressed over the right eye socket. Seeing with one eye, there was no depth. It was like a huge, flat picture. The coyote suddenly sat in the middle of the picture, looking back at her, its mouth open, its eyes narrowed, grinning. Her legs began to steady, and her head didn't pound so hard, though the deep black ache was always there. She had nearly caught up to the coyote when it trotted off again. This time she spoke. Please wait, she said. Okay, said the coyote, but it trotted right on. She followed, walking downhill into the flat picture that at each step was deep. Each step was different underfoot. Each sagebrush was different, and all the same. Following the coyote, she came out from the shadow of the rim rock cliffs, and the sun at eye level dazzled her left eye. Its bright warmth soaked into her muscles and bones at once. The air, that all night had been so hard to breathe, came sweet and easy. The sage bushes were pulling in their shadows, and the sun was hot on the child's back when she followed the coyote along the rim of a gully. After a while, the coyote slanted down the undercut slope, and the child scrambled after, through scrub willows, to the thin creek in its wide sandbed. Both drank. The coyote crossed the creek, not with a careless charge and splashing like a dog, but single foot and quiet, like a cat. Always it carried its tail low. The child hesitated, knowing that wet shoes make blistered feet, and then waded across in as few steps as possible. Her right arm ached with the effort of holding her hand up over her eye. "I need a bandage," she said to the coyote. It cocked its head and said nothing. It stretched out its forelegs and lay watching the water, resting but alert. The child sat down nearby on the hot sand and tried to move her right hand. It was glued to the skin around her eye by dried blood. At the little tearing away pain, she whimpered. Though it was a small pain, it frightened her. The coyote came over close and poked its long snout into her face. Its strong, sharp smell was in her nostrils. It began to lick the awful, aching blindness, cleaning and cleaning with its curled, precise, strong, wet tongue, until the child was able to cry a little with relief, being comforted. Her head was bent close to the gray-yellow ribs, and she saw the hard nipples, the whitish belly fur. She put her arm around the she-coyote, stroking the harsh coat over back and ribs. "Okay," the coyote said, "let's go," and set off without a backward glance. The child scrambled to her feet and followed. "Where are we going?" she said, and the coyote, trotting on down along the creek, answered, "On down along the creek." There must have been a while she was asleep while she walked, because she felt like she was waking up, but she was walking along, only in a different place. She didn't know how she knew it was different. They were still following the creek, though the gully was flattened out to nothing much, and there was still sagebrush range as far as the eye could see. The eye, the good one, felt rested. The other one still ached, but not so sharply, and there was no use thinking about it. But where was the coyote? She stopped. The pit of cold into which the plain had fallen reopened, and she fell. She stood falling, a thin whimper making itself in her throat. "Over here." The child turned. She saw a coyote gnawing at the half-dried-up carcass of a crow, black feathers sticking to the black lips and narrow jaw. She saw a tawny-skinned woman kneeling by a campfire, sprinkling something into a conical pot. She heard the water boiling in the pot, though it was propped between rocks, off the fire. The woman's hair was yellow and gray, bound back with a string. Her feet were bare. The upturned soles looked as dark and hard as shoe soles, but the arch of the foot was high, and the toes made two neat curving rows. She wore blue jeans and an old white shirt. She looked over at the girl. "Come on, eat crow," she said. The child slowly came toward the woman and the fire and squatted down. She had stopped falling and felt very light and empty, and her tongue was like a piece of wood stuck in her mouth. Coyote was now blowing into the pot or basket or whatever it was. She reached into it with two fingers and pulled her hand away, shaking it and shouting, "Ow, shit! Why don't I ever have any spoons?" She broke off a dead twig of sagebrush, dipped it into the pot, and licked it. "Oh, boy," she said. "Come on." The child moved a little closer, broke off a twig, dipped. Lumpy, pinkish mush clung to the twig. She licked. The taste was rich and delicate. "What is it?" she asked after a long time of dipping and licking.
"Food. Dried salmon mush," Coyote said. "It's cooling down."
She stuck two fingers into the mush again, this time getting a good load, which she ate very neatly. The child, when she tried, got mush all over her chin. It was like chopsticks. It took practice. She practiced. They ate turn and turn until nothing was left in the pot but three rocks. The child didn't ask why there were rocks in the mush pot. They licked the rocks clean. Coyote licked out the inside of the pot basket, rinsed it once in the creek, and put it onto her head. It fit nicely, making a conical hat. She pulled off her blue jeans.
"Piss on the fire," she cried,
and did so, standing, straddling it.
"Ah, steam between the legs," she said.
The child, embarrassed, thought she was supposed to do the same thing, but didn't want to, and didn't. Bare-assed, Coyote danced around the dampened fire, kicking her long, thin legs out and singing,
"Buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight, come out tonight, come out tonight, buffalo gals, won't you come out tonight and dance by the light of the moon."
She pulled her jeans back on. The child was burying the remains of the fire in creek sand, heaping it over, seriously, wanting to do right. Coyote watched her.
"Is that you?" she said. "A buffalo gal? What happened to the rest of you?"
"The rest of me?" The child looked at herself, alarmed.
"All your people."
"Oh, well, Mom took Bobby, he's my little brother, away with Uncle Norm. He isn't really my uncle or anything. So Mr. Michaels was going there anyway, so he was going to fly me over to my real father in Canyonville. Linda, my stepmother, you know, she said it was okay for the summer anyhow if I was there, and then we could see. But the plane." In the silence, the girl's face became dark red, then grayish white. Coyote watched, fascinated.
"Oh," the girl said. "Oh, oh, Mr. Michaels. He must be... Did the..."
"Come on," said Coyote, and set off walking.
The child cried, "I ought to go back."
"What for?"
said Coyote. She stopped to look round at the child, then went on faster.
"Come on, gal."
She said it as a name. Maybe it was the child's name, Myra, as spoken by Coyote. The child, confused and despairing, protested again, but followed her.
"Where are we going? Where are we?"
"This is my country," Coyote answered, with dignity, making a long, slow gesture all round the vast horizon. "I made it. Every goddamn sagebrush."
And they went on. Coyote's gait was easy, even a little shambling, but she covered the ground. The child struggled not to drop behind. Shadows were beginning to pull themselves out again from under the rocks and shrubs. Leaving the creek, they went up a long, low, uneven slope that ended away off against the sky in Rimrock. Dark trees stood, one here, another way over there. What people called a juniper forest. A desert forest. One with a lot more between the trees than trees. Each juniper they passed smelled sharply. Cat pee smell, the kids at school called it. But the child liked it. It seemed to go into her mind and wake her up. She picked off a juniper berry and held it in her mouth, but after a while spat it out. The aching was coming back in huge black waves, and she kept stumbling. She found that she was sitting down on the ground. When she tried to get up, her legs shook and wouldn't go under her. She felt foolish and frightened and began to cry.
"We're home,"
Coyote called from way on up the hill. The child looked with her one weeping eye and saw sagebrush, juniper, cheatgrass, Rimrock. She heard a coyote yip far off in the dry twilight. She saw a little town up under the Rimrock, board houses, shacks, all unpainted. She heard Coyote call again.
"Come on up, pup. Come on, gal, we're home."
She couldn't get up, so she tried to go on all fours, the long way up the slope to the houses under the Rimrock. Long before she got there, several people came to meet her. They were all children, she thought at first, and then began to understand that most of them were grown people, but all were very short. They were broad-bodied, fat, with fine, delicate hands and feet. Their eyes were bright. Some of the women helped her stand up and walk, coaxing her.
"It isn't much farther. You're doing fine."
In the late dusk, lights shone yellow-bright through doorways and through unchinked cracks between boards. Wood smoke hung sweet in the quiet air. The short people talked and laughed all the time, softly.
"Where's she going to stay?"
"Put her in with Robin. They're all asleep already."
"Oh, she can stay with us."
The child asked hoarsely,
"Where's Coyote?"
"Out hunting," the short people said.
A deeper voice spoke.
"Somebody new has come into town."
"Yes, a new person,"
one of the short men answered. Among these people, the deep-voiced man bulked impressive. He was broad and tall, with powerful hands, a big head, a short neck. They made way for him respectfully. He moved very quietly, respectful of them also. His eyes, when he stared down at the child, were amazing. When he blinked, it was like the passing of a hand before a candle flame.
"It's only an owlet," he said. "What have you let happen to your eye, new person?"
We were flying."
"You're too young to fly," the big man said in his deep, soft voice. "Who brought you here?"
"Coyote."
And one of the short people confirmed,
"She came here with Coyote, young owl."
"Then maybe she should stay in Coyote's house tonight,"
the big man said.
"It's all bones and lonely in there," said a short woman with fat cheeks and a striped shirt. "She can come with us."
That seemed to decide it. The fat-cheeked woman patted the child's arm and took her past several shacks and shanties to a low, windowless house. The doorway was so low, even the child had to duck down to enter. There were a lot of people inside, some already there and some crowding in after the fat-cheeked woman. Several babies were fast asleep in cradle boxes in corners. There was a good fire and a good smell, like toasted sesame seeds. The child was given food and ate a little, but her head swam and the blackness in her right eye kept coming across her left eye, so she couldn't see at all for a while. Nobody asked her name or told her what to call them. She heard the children call the fat-cheeked woman Chipmunk. She got up courage finally to say,
"Is there somewhere I can go to sleep, Mrs. Chipmunk?"
"Sure, come on,"
one of the daughters said.
"In here,"
and took the child into a back room, not completely partitioned off from the crowded front room, but dark and uncrowded. Big shelves with mattresses and blankets lined the walls.
"Crawl in,"
said Chipmunk's daughter, patting the child's arm in the comforting way they had. The child climbed onto a shelf under a blanket. She laid down her head. She thought,
"I didn't brush my teeth."
Chapter 2. She woke. She slept again. In Chipmunk's sleeping room, it was always stuffy, warm, and half dark, day and night. People came in and slept, and got up and left, night and day. She dozed and slept, got down to drink from the bucket and dipper in the front room, and went back to sleep and doze. She was sitting up on the shelf, her feet dangling, not feeling bad anymore, but dreamy, weak. She felt in her jeans pockets. In the left front one was a pocket comb and a bubblegum wrapper. In the right front, 2 dollar bills, and a quarter, and a dime. Chipmunk and another woman, a very pretty, dark-eyed, plump one, came in.
"So you woke up for your dance?"
Chipmunk greeted her, laughing, and sat down by her, with an arm around her.
"Jay's giving you a dance," the dark woman said. "He's going to make you all right. Let's get you all ready."
There was a spring up under the rimrock that flattened out into a pool with slimy, reedy shores. A flock of noisy children splashing in it ran off and left the child and the two women to bathe. The water was warm on the surface, cold down on the feet and legs. All naked, the two soft-voiced laughing women, their round bellies and breasts, broad hips and buttocks, gleaming warm in the late afternoon light, sluiced the child down, washed and stroked her limbs and hands and hair, cleaned around the cheekbone and eyebrow of her right eye with infinite softness, admired her, sudsed her, rinsed her, splashed her out of the water, dried her off, dried each other off, got dressed, dressed her, braided her hair, braided each other's hair, tied feathers on the braid ends, admired her and each other again, and brought her back down into the little straggling town and to a kind of playing field or dirt parking lot in among the houses. There were no streets, just paths and dirt, no lawns and gardens, just sagebrush and dirt. Quite a few people were gathering or wandering around the open place, looking dressed up, wearing colorful shirts, print dresses, strings of beads, earrings.
"Hey there, Chipmunk, Whitefoot," they greeted the women.
A man in new jeans, with a bright blue velveteen vest over a clean, faded blue work shirt, came forward to meet them. Very handsome, tense, and important.
"All right, gal," he said in a harsh, loud voice, which startled among all these soft-speaking people. "We're going to get that eye fixed right up tonight. You just sit down here and don't worry about a thing."
He took her wrist, gently, despite his bossy, brassy manner, and led her to a woven mat that lay on the dirt near the middle of the open place. There, feeling very foolish, she had to sit down and was told to stay still. She soon got over feeling that everybody was looking at her, since nobody paid her more attention than a checking glance, or from Chipmunk or Whitefoot and their families, a reassuring wink. Every now and then Jay rushed over to her and said something like,
"Going to be as good as new,"
and went off again to organize people, waving his long blue arms and shouting. Coming up the hill to the open place, a lean, loose, tawny figure, and the child started to jump up, remembered she was to sit still, and sat still, calling out softly,
"Coyote! Coyote!"
Coyote came lounging by. She grinned. She stood looking down at the child.
"Don't let that blue jay fuck you up, gal," she said,
and lounged on. The child's gaze followed her, yearning. People were sitting down now over on one side of the open place, making an uneven half-circle that kept getting added to at the ends until there was nearly a circle of people sitting on the dirt around the child, 10 or 15 paces from her. All the people wore the kind of clothes the child was used to, jeans and jeans jackets, shirts, vests, cotton dresses, but they were all barefoot, and she thought they were more beautiful than the people she knew, each in a different way, as if each one had invented beauty. Yet some of them were also very strange, thin, black, shining people with whispery voices, a long-legged woman with eyes like jewels. The big man called Young Owl was there, sleepy-looking and dignified, like Judge McCown, who owned a 60,000-acre ranch. And beside him was a woman the child thought might be his sister, for like him, she had a hook nose and big, strong hands. but she was lean and dark, and there was a crazy look in her fierce eyes. Yellow eyes, but round, not long and slanted like Coyote's. There was Coyote sitting, yawning, scratching her armpit, bored. Now somebody was entering the circle, a man wearing only a kind of kilt and a cloak painted or beaded with diamond shapes, dancing to the rhythm of the rattle he carried and shook with a buzzing fast beat. His limbs and body were thick yet supple, his movements smooth and pouring. The child kept her gaze on him as he danced past her, around her, past again. The rattle in his hand shook almost too fast to see. In the other hand was something thin and sharp. People were singing around the circle now, a few notes repeated in time to the rattle, soft and tuneless. It was exciting and boring, strange and familiar. The rattler wove his dancing closer and closer to her, darting at her. The first time she flinched away, frightened by the lunging movement and by his flat, cold face with narrow eyes. But after that, she sat still, knowing her part. The dancing went on, the singing went on, till they carried her past boredom into a floating that could go on forever. Jay had come strutting into the circle and was standing beside her. He couldn't sing, but he called out,
"Hey, hey, hey, hey,"
in his big, harsh voice, and everybody answered from all round, and the echo came down from the rimrock on the second beat. Jay was holding up a stick with a ball on it in one hand and something like a marble in the other. The stick was a pipe. He got smoke into his mouth from it and blew it in four directions and up and down and then over the marble, a puff each time. Then the rattle stopped suddenly, and everything was silent for several breaths. Jay squatted down and looked intently into the child's face, his head cocked to one side. He reached forward, muttering something in time to the rattle and the singing that had started up again louder than before. He touched the child's right eye in the black center of the pane. She flinched and endured. His touch wasn't gentle. She saw the marble, a dull yellow ball like beeswax in his hand. Then she shut her seeing eye and set her teeth.
"There," Jay shouted. "Open up. Come on. Let's see."
Her jaw clenched like a vise. She opened both eyes. The lid of the right one stuck and dragged with such a searing white pain that she nearly threw up as she sat there in the middle of everybody watching.
"Hey, can you see? How's it work? It looks great."
Jay was shaking her arm, railing at her.
"How's it feel? Is it working?"
What she saw was confused, hazy, yellowish. She began to discover, as everybody came crowding around, peering at her, smiling, stroking and patting her arms and shoulders, that if she shut the hurting eye and looked with the other, everything was clear and flat. If she used them both, things were blurry and yellowish, but deep. There, right close, was Coyote's long nose and narrow eyes and grin.
"What is it, Jay?"
she was asking, peering at the new eye.
"One of mine you stole that time?" "It's pine pitch," Jay shouted furiously. "You think I'd use some stupid second-hand coyote eye? I'm a doctor."
"Ooh, ooh, a doctor," Coyote said.
"Boy, that is one ugly eye. Why didn't you ask Rabbit for a rabbit dropping? That eye looks like shit."
She put her lean face yet closer, till the child thought she was going to kiss her. Instead, the thin, firm tongue once more licked accurate across the pane, cooling, clearing. When the child opened both eyes again, the world looked pretty good.
It works fine, she said.
Hey, Jay yelled. She says it works fine. It works fine. She says so. I told you. What'd I tell you?
He went off waving his arms and yelling. Coyote had disappeared. Everybody was wandering off. The child stood up, stiff from long sitting. It was nearly dark, only the long west held a great depth of pale radiance. Eastward, the plains ran down into night. Lights were on in some of the shanties. Off at the edge of town, somebody was playing a creaky fiddle, a lonesome chirping tune. A person came beside her and spoke quietly.
Where will you stay?
I don't know, the child said. She was feeling extremely hungry. Can I stay with Coyote?
She isn't home much, the soft-voiced woman said. You were staying with Chipmunk, weren't you? Or there's Rabbit, or Jackrabbit. They have families.
Do you have a family? The girl asked, looking at the delicate, soft-eyed woman.
Two fawns, the woman answered, smiling. But I just came into town for the dance.
I'd really like to stay with Coyote, the child said after a little pause, timid, but obstinate.
Okay, that's fine. Her house is over here.
Doe walked along beside the child to a ramshackle cabin on the high edge of town. No light shone from inside. A lot of junk was scattered around the front. There was no step up to the half-open door. Over the door, a battered pine board, nailed up crooked, said, "Bide a wee."
Hey, Coyote. Visitors, Doe said.
Nothing happened. Doe pushed the door farther open and peered in.
She's out hunting, I guess. I better be getting back to the fawns. You going to be okay? Anybody else here will give you something to eat, you know. Okay?
Yeah, I'm fine. Thank you, the child said. She watched Doe walk away through the clear twilight, a severely elegant walk, small steps, like a woman in high heels, quick, precise, very light. Inside Bide a Wee, it was too dark to see anything, and so cluttered that she fell over something at every step. She couldn't figure out where or how to light a fire. There was something that felt like a bed, but when she lay down on it, it felt more like a dirty clothes pile and smelt like one. Things bit her legs, arms, neck, and back. She was terribly hungry. By smell, she found her way to what had to be a dead fish hanging from the ceiling in one corner. By feel, she broke off a greasy flake and tasted it. It was smoked dried salmon. She ate one succulent piece after another until she was satisfied and licked her fingers clean. Near the open door, starlight shone on water in a pot of some kind. The child smelled it cautiously, tasted it cautiously, and drank just enough to quench her thirst, for it tasted of mud and was warm and stale. Then she went back to the bed of dirty clothes and fleas and lay down. She could have gone to Chipmunk's house, or other friendly households. She thought of that as she lay forlorn in Coyote's dirty bed. But she didn't go. She slapped at fleas until she fell asleep. Along in the deep night, somebody said, "Move over, pup," and was warm beside her. Breakfast, eaten sitting in the sun in the doorway, was dried salmon powder mush. Coyote hunted, mornings and evenings, but what they ate wasn't fresh game, but salmon and dried stuff and any berries in season.
The child didn't ask about this. It made sense to her. She was going to ask Coyote why she slept at night and waked in the day like humans, instead of the other way round like coyotes. But when she framed the question in her mind, she saw at once that night is when you sleep and day when you're awake. That made sense too. But one question she did ask, one hot day when they were lying around slapping fleas, "I don't understand why you all look like people," she said.
"We are people."
"I mean, people like me. Humans."
"Resemblance is in the eye,"
Coyote said.
"How is that lousy eye, by the way?"
"It's fine. But, like, you wear clothes and live in houses with fires and stuff."
"That's what you think. If that loudmouth Jay hadn't horned in, I could have done a really good job."
The child was quite used to Coyote's disinclination to stick to any one subject, and to her boasting. Coyote was like a lot of kids she knew, in some respects. Not in others.
"You mean what I'm seeing isn't true? Isn't real? Like on TV or something?"
"No," Coyote said. "Hey, that's a tick on your collar."
She reached over, flicked the tick off, picked it up on one finger, bit it, and spat out the bits.
"Yuck,"
the child said.
"So?"
"So, to me you're basically grayish yellow and run on four legs. To that lot," she waved disdainfully at the warren of little houses next down the hill, "you hop around twitching your nose all the time. To hawk, you're an egg, or maybe getting pin feathers. See, it just depends on how you look at things. There are only two kinds of people."
"Humans and animals?"
"No, the kind of people who say, there are two kinds of people, and the kind of people who don't."
Coyote cracked up, pounding her thigh and yelling with delight at her joke. The child didn't get it, and waited.
"Okay," Coyote said. "There's the first people, and then the others. That's the two kinds."
"The first people are?"
"Us, the animals, and things. All the old ones, you know. And you pups, kids, fledglings. All first people."
"And the others?"
"Them," Coyote said. "You know, the others, the new people, the ones who came."
Her fine, hard face had gone serious, rather formidable. She glanced directly, as she seldom did, at the child, a brief gold sharpness.
"We were here," she said. "We were always here. We are always here. Where we are is here. But it's their country now. They're running it. Shit, even I did better."
The child pondered and offered a word she had used to hear a good deal.
"They're illegal immigrants."
"Illegal," Coyote said, mocking, sneering. "Illegal is a sick bird. What the fuck's illegal mean? You want a code of justice from a coyote? Grow up, kid."
"I don't want to."
"You don't want to grow up?"
"I'll be the other kind if I do."
"Yeah. So?" Coyote said and shrugged. "That's life."
She got up and went around the house, and the child heard her pissing in the backyard. A lot of things were hard to take about Coyote as a mother. When her boyfriends came to visit, the child learned to go stay with Chipmunk or the rabbits for the night, because Coyote and her friend wouldn't even wait to get on the bed, but would start doing that right on the floor or even out in the yard. A couple of times Coyote came back late from hunting with a friend, and the child had to lie up against the wall in the same bed and hear and feel them doing that right next to her. It was something like fighting and something like dancing, with a beat to it. And she didn't mind too much, except that it made it hard to stay asleep. Once she woke up and one of Coyote's friends was stroking her stomach in a creepy way. She didn't know what to do, but Coyote woke up and realized what he was doing, bit him hard, and kicked him out of bed. He spent the night on the floor and apologized next morning.
"Ah, hell, Kai. I forgot the kid was there. I thought it was you."
Coyote, unappeased, yelled, "You think I don't got any standards? You think I'd let some coyote rape a kid in my bed?" She kicked him out of the house and grumbled about him all day. But a while later, he spent the night again, and he and Coyote did that 3 or 4 times. Another thing that was embarrassing was the way Coyote peed anywhere, taking her pants down in public. But most people here didn't seem to care. The thing that worried the child most, maybe, was when Coyote did number 2 anywhere, and then turned around and talked to it. That seemed so awful. As if Coyote was, the way she often seemed, but really wasn't, crazy. The child gathered up all the old dry turds from around the house one day while Coyote was having a nap, and buried them in a sandy place near where she and Bobcat and some of the other people generally went and did and buried their number 2s. Coyote woke up, came lounging out of Bidewee, rubbing her hands through her thick, fair, grayish hair and yawning, looked all around once with those narrow eyes and said, "Hey, where are they?" Then she shouted, "Where are you? Where are you?" And a faint, muffled chorus came from over in the sandy draw.
"Mommy! Mommy! We're here!"
Coyote trotted over, squatted down, raked out every turd, and talked with them for a long time. When she came back, she said nothing, but the child, red-faced and heart-pounding, said,
"I'm sorry I did that."
"It's just easier when they're all around close by," Coyote said, washing her hands. Despite the filth of her house, she kept herself quite clean, in her own fashion.
"I kept stepping on them," the child said, trying to justify her deed.
"Poor little shits," said Coyote, practicing dance steps.
"Coyote," the child said timidly, "did you ever have any children? I mean, real pups?"
Did I have children? Litters. That one that tried feeling you up, you know? That was my son. Pick of the litter. Listen, gal. Have daughters. When you have anything, have daughters. At least they clear out."
Chapter 3. The child thought of herself as Gal, but also sometimes as Myra. So far as she knew, she was the only person in town who had 2 names. She had to think about that, and about what Coyote had said about the 2 kinds of people. She had to think about where she belonged. Some persons in town made it clear that as far as they were concerned, she didn't and never would belong there. Hawk's furious stare burned through her. The skunk children made audible remarks about what she smelled like. And though Whitefoot and Chipmunk and their families were kind, it was the generosity of big families, where one more or less simply doesn't count. If one of them, or Cottontail or Jackrabbit, had come upon her in the desert lying lost and half blind, would they have stayed with her, like Coyote? That was Coyote's craziness, what they called her craziness. She wasn't afraid. She went between the 2 kinds of people. She crossed over. Buck and Doe and their beautiful children weren't really afraid because they lived so constantly in danger. The Rattler wasn't afraid because he was so dangerous. And yet maybe he was afraid of her, for he never spoke and never came close to her. None of them treated her the way Coyote did. Even among the children, her only constant playmate was one younger than herself, a preposterous and fearless little boy called Horn-Toed Child. They dug and built together, out among the sagebrush, and played at hunting and gathering and keeping house and holding dances, all the great games. A pale, squatty child with fringed eyebrows. He was a self-contained but loyal friend, and he knew a great deal for his age. "There isn't anybody else like me here," she said, as they sat by the pool in the morning sunlight.
"There isn't anybody much like me anywhere," said Horn-Toed Child.
"Well, you know what I mean."
"Yeah. There used to be people like you around, I guess."
"What were they called?"
"Oh, people. Like everybody."
"But where do my people live?"
"They have towns. I used to live in one. I don't know where they are, is all.
I ought to find out. I don't know where my mother is now, but my daddy's in Kenyonville. I was going there when..."
"Ask Horse," said Horn-Toed Child sagaciously. He had moved away from the water, which he didn't like and never drank, and was plaiting rushes.
"I don't know Horse.
He hangs around the butte down there a lot of the time. He's waiting till his uncle gets old and he can kick him out and be the big honcho. The old man and the women don't want him around till then. Horses are weird. Anyway, he's the one to ask. He gets around a lot, and his people came here with the new people. That's what they say, anyhow."
Illegal immigrants, the girl thought. She took Horn-Toed's advice, and one long day, when Coyote was gone on one of her unannounced and unexplained trips, she took a pouch full of dried salmon and salmon berries and went off alone to the flat-topped butte miles away in the southwest. There was a beautiful spring at the foot of the butte and a trail to it with a lot of footprints on it. She waited there under willows by the clear pool, and after a while Horse came running, splendid, with copper-red skin and long, strong legs, deep chest, dark eyes, his black hair whipping his back as he ran. He stopped, not at all winded, and gave a snort as he looked at her.
"Who are you?"
Nobody in town asked that, ever. She saw it was true. Horse had come here with her people, people who had to ask each other who they were.
"I live with Coyote," she said cautiously.
"Oh, sure, I heard about you," Horse said.
He knelt to drink from the pool, long, deep draughts, his hands plunged in the cool water. When he had drunk, he wiped his mouth, sat back on his heels, and announced,
"I'm going to be king."
"King of the horses?"
"Right. Pretty soon now. I could lick the old man already, but I can wait. Let him have his day," said Horse, vainglorious, magnanimous. The child gazed at him, in love already, forever.
"I can comb your hair if you like," she said.
"Great," said Horse, and sat still while she stood behind him, tugging her pocket comb through his coarse, black, shining, yard-long hair.
It took a long time to get it smooth. She tied it in a massive ponytail with willow bark when she was done. Horse bent over the pool to admire himself.
"That's great," he said. "That's really beautiful."
"Do you ever go where the other people are?" she asked in a low voice. He didn't reply for long enough that she thought he wasn't going to. Then he said,
"You mean the metal places, the glass places, the holes? I go around them. There are all the walls now. There didn't used to be so many. Grandmother said there didn't used to be any walls.
Do you know, Grandmother? He asked naively, looking at her with his great dark eyes.
Your grandmother?
Well, yes, grandmother. You know, who makes the web. Well, anyhow, I know there's some of my people. Horses, there. I've seen them across the walls. They act really crazy. You know, we brought the new people here. They couldn't have got here without us. They only have two legs, and they have those metal shells. I can tell you that whole story. The king has to know the stories.
I like stories a lot.
It takes 3 nights to tell it. What do you want to know about them?
I was thinking that maybe I ought to go there, where they are.
It's dangerous. Really dangerous. You can't go through. They'd catch you.
I'd just like to know the way.
I know the way, Horse said, sounding for the first time entirely adult and reliable. She knew he did know the way. It's a long run for a colt. He looked at her again. I've got a cousin with different color eyes, he said, looking from her right to her left eye. One brown and one blue. But she's an Appaloosa.
Blue Jay made the yellow one, the child explained. I lost my own one in the... when... You don't think I could get to those places?
Why do you want to?
I sort of feel like I have to.
Horse nodded. He got up. She stood still. I could take you, I guess, he said.
Would you? When?
Oh, now, I guess. Once I'm king, I won't be able to leave, you know. Have to protect the women. And I sure wouldn't let my people get anywhere near those places.
A shudder ran right down his magnificent body. Yet he said, with a toss of his head,
They couldn't catch me, of course, but the others can't run like I do.
How long would it take us? Horse thought a while.
Well, the nearest place like that is over by the Red Rocks. If we left now, we'd be back here around tomorrow noon. It's just a little hole.
She didn't know what he meant by a hole, but didn't ask.
You want to go? Horse said, flipping back his ponytail.
Okay,
the girl said, feeling the ground go out from under her. Can you run?
She shook her head. I walked here, though.
Horse laughed, a large, cheerful laugh. Come on, he said, and knelt and held his hands back turned like stirrups for her to mount to his shoulders. What do they call you? He teased, rising easily, setting right off at a jog trot. Gnat? Fly? Flea?
Tick, because I stick, the child cried, gripping the willow bark tie of the black mane, laughing with delight at being suddenly 8 feet tall and traveling across the desert without even trying, like the tumbleweed, as fast as the wind. Moon. A night past full, rose to light the plains for them. Horse jogged easily on and on. Somewhere deep in the night, they stopped at a pygmy owl camp, ate a little, and rested. Most of the owls were out hunting, but an old lady entertained them at her campfire, telling them tales about the ghost of a cricket, about the great invisible people, tales that the child heard interwoven with her own dreams as she dozed and half woke and dozed again. Then Horace put her up on his shoulders, and on they went at a tireless slow lope. Moon went down behind them, and before them, the sky paled into rose and gold. The soft night wind was gone. The air was sharp, cold, still. On it, in it,
There was a faint, sour smell of burning. The child felt horse's gait change, grow tighter, uneasy.
"Hey, Prince!"
A small, slightly scolding voice. The child knew it, and placed it as soon as she saw the person sitting by a juniper tree, neatly dressed, wearing an old black cap.
"Hey, chickadee,"
Horse said, coming round and stopping. The child had observed, back in Coyote's town, that everybody treated Chickadee with respect. She didn't see why. Chickadee seemed an ordinary person, busy and talkative like most of the small birds, nothing like so endearing as quail, or so impressive as hawk or great owl.
"You're going on that way?"
Chickadee asked Horse.
"The little one wants to see if her people are living there," Horse said, surprising the child.
Was that what she wanted? Chickadee looked disapproving, as she often did. She whistled a few notes thoughtfully, another of her habits, and then got up.
"I'll come along."
"That's great," Horse said, thankfully.
"I'll scout,"
Chickadee said, and off she went, surprisingly fast, ahead of them, while Horse took up his steady, long lope. The sour smell was stronger in the air. Chickadee halted, way ahead of them, on a slight rise, and stood still. Horse dropped to a walk, and then stopped.
"There,"
he said in a low voice. The child stared. In the strange light and slight mist before sunrise, she couldn't see clearly, and when she strained and peered, she felt as if her left eye weren't seeing at all.
"What is it?"
she whispered.
"One of the holes, across the wall. See?"
It did seem there was a line, a straight, jerky line drawn across the sagebrush plain, and on the far side of it, nothing? Was it mist? Something moved there.
"It's cattle," she said.
Horse stood silent, uneasy. Chickadee was coming back toward them.
"It's a ranch," the child said. "That's a fence. There's a lot of Herefords."
The words tasted like iron, like salt in her mouth. The things she named wavered in her sight and faded, leaving nothing. A hole in the world, a burned place like a cigarette burn.
"Go closer," she urged Horse. "I want to see."
And as if he owed her obedience, he went forward, tense but unquestioning. Chickadee came up to them.
"Nobody around," she said in her small, dry voice. "But there's one of those fast turtle things coming."
Horse nodded, but kept going forward. Gripping his broad shoulders, the child stared into the blank, and as if Chickadee's words had focused her eyes, she saw again the scattered white faces, a few of them looking up with bluish, rolling eyes, the fences. Over the rise, a chimneyed house roof and a high barn, and then in the distance, something moving fast, too fast, burning across the ground straight at them at terrible speed.
"Run!"
she yelled to Horse.
"Run away, run!"
As if released from bonds, he wheeled and ran, flat out, in great reaching strides, away from sunrise, the fiery burning chariot, the smell of acid, iron, death. And Chickadee flew before them like a cinder on the air of dawn. Chapter 4
"Horse," Coyote said. "That prick? Cat food?"
Coyote had been there when the child got home to bide a wee, but she clearly hadn't been worrying about where Gal was, and maybe hadn't even noticed she was gone. She was in a vile mood, and took it all wrong when the child tried to tell her where she had been.
"If you're going to do damn fool things, next time do 'em with me,"
At least I'm an expert, she said, morose, and slouched out the door. The child saw her squatting down, poking an old white turd with a stick, trying to get it to answer some question she kept asking it. The turd lay obstinately still. Later in the day, the child saw two coyote men, a young one and a mangy-looking older one, loitering around near the spring, looking over at Bidawi. She decided it would be a good night to spend somewhere else. The thought of the crowded rooms of Chipmunk's house wasn't attractive. It was going to be a warm night again tonight, and moonlit. Maybe she would sleep outside. If she could feel sure some people wouldn't come around, like the Rattler. She was standing indecisive halfway through town when a dry voice said, "Hey, gal."
"Hey, chickadee."
The trim, black-capped woman was standing on her doorstep, shaking out a rug. She kept her house neat, trim, like herself. Having come back across the desert with her, the child now knew, though she still couldn't have said, why Chickadee was a respected person.
"I thought maybe I'd sleep out tonight," the child said, tentative.
"Unhealthy," said Chickadee. "What are nests for?"
"Mom's kind of busy," the child said.
"Tsk," went Chickadee, and snapped the rug with disapproving vigor. "What about your little friend? At least they're decent people."
"Horny Toad? His parents are so shy."
"Well, come in and have something to eat anyhow," said Chickadee. The child helped her cook dinner. She knew now why there were rocks in the mush pot.
"Chickadee," she said, "I still don't understand. Can I ask you? Mom said it depends who's seeing it, but still, I mean, if I see you wearing clothes and everything like humans, then how come you cook this way, in baskets, you know, and there aren't any of the things like they have? There where we were with horse this morning." "I don't know,"
Chickadee said. Her voice indoors was quite soft and pleasant.
"I guess we do things the way they always were done. When your people and my people live together, you know, and together with everything else here. The rocks, you know, the plants and everything."
She looked at the basket of willow bark, fern root, and pitch, at the blackened rocks that were heating in the fire.
"You see how it all goes together?" "But you have fire. That's different."
"Ah," said Chickadee, impatient. "You people. Do you think you invented the sun?" She took up the wooden tongs, plopped the heated rocks into the water-filled basket with a terrific hiss and steam and loud bubblings. The child sprinkled in the pounded seeds and stirred. Chickadee brought out a basket of fine blackberries. They sat on the newly shaken-out rug and ate. The child's two-finger scoop technique with mush was now highly refined.
"Maybe I didn't cause the world," Chickadee said, "but I'm a better cook than Coyote."
The child nodded, stuffing.
"I don't know why I made horse go there," she said, after she had stuffed. "I got just as scared as him when I saw it. But now I feel again like I have to go back there. But I want to stay here. With Coyote. I don't understand."
"When we lived together, it was all one place," Chickadee said in her slow, soft home voice.
"But now the others, the new people, they live apart. And their places are so heavy. They weigh down on our place. They press on it, draw it, suck it,
eat it, eat holes in it, crowd it out. Maybe after a while longer, there'll only be one place again. Their place. And none of us here. I knew bison, out over the mountains. I knew antelope, right here. I knew grizzly and gray wolf, up west there. Gone. All gone. And the salmon you eat at Coyote's house. Those are the dream salmon. Those are the true food. But in the rivers, how many salmon now? The rivers that were red with them in spring. Who dances now when the first salmon offers himself? Who dances by the river? Oh, you should ask Coyote about all this. She knows more than I do. But she forgets. She's hopeless, worse than Raven. She has to piss on every post. She's a terrible housekeeper. Chickadee's voice had sharpened. She whistled a note or two and said no more. After a while, the child asked very softly, "Who is Grandmother?" "Grandmother," Chickadee said. She looked at the child and ate several blackberries thoughtfully. She stroked the rug they sat on. "If I built the fire on the rug, it would burn a hole in it," she said. "Right? So we build the fire on sand, on dirt. Things are woven together. So we call the weaver the grandmother." She whistled four notes, looking up the smoke hole. "After all," she added, "maybe all this place, the other places too, maybe they're all only one side of the weaving. I don't know. I can only look with one eye at a time. How can I tell how deep it goes?" Lying that night, rolled up in a blanket in Chickadee's backyard, the child heard the wind soughing and storming in the cottonwoods down in the draw, and then slept deeply, weary from the long night before. Just at sunrise, she woke. The eastern mountains were a cloudy dark red, as if the level light shone through them, as through a hand held before the fire. In the tobacco patch, the only farming anybody in this town did was to raise a little wild tobacco, lizard and beetle were singing some kind of growing song or blessing song, soft and desultory. "Ha, ha, ha. Ha. Ha, 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 ha." And as she lay warm-curled on the ground, the song made her feel rooted in the ground, cradled on it and in it. So where her fingers ended and the dirt began, she didn't know, as if she were dead. But she was wholly alive. She was the earth's life. She got up dancing, left the blanket folded neatly on Chickadee's neat and already empty bed, and danced up the hill to Bidewee. At the half-open door, she sang, "Danced with a gal with a hole in her stocking, and her knees kept a-knocking, and her toes kept a-rocking. Danced with a gal with a hole in her stocking, danced by the light of the moon." Coyote emerged, tousled and lurching, and eyed her narrowly.
"Shoot," she said.
She sucked her teeth and then went to splash water all over her head from the gourd by the door. She shook her head and the water drops flew.
"Let's get out of here," she said. "I have had it. I don't know what got into me. If I'm pregnant again at my age, oh shit. Let's get out of town. I need a change of air."
In the foggy dark of the house, the child could see at least two coyote men sprawled, snoring away on the bed and floor. Coyote walked over to the old white turd and kicked it.
"Why didn't you stop me?" she shouted. "I told you,"
the turd muttered sulkily.
"Dumb shit," Coyote said. "Come on, gal, let's go." "Where to?"
She didn't wait for an answer.
"I know, come on.
and she set off through town at that lazy-looking, rangy walk that was so hard to keep up with. But the child was full of pep and came dancing, so that Coyote began dancing too, skipping and pirouetting and fooling around all the way down the long slope to the level plains. There she slanted their way off northeastward. Horse Butte was at their backs, getting smaller in the distance. Along near noon, the child said, "I didn't bring anything to eat."
"Something will turn up," Coyote said. "Sure to."
And pretty soon, she turned aside, going straight to a tiny gray shack hidden by a couple of half-dead junipers and a stand of rabbit brush. The place smelled terrible. A sign on the door said, "Fox, private, no trespassing." But Coyote pushed it open and trotted right back out with half a small smoked salmon.
"Nobody home but us chickens," she said, grinning sweetly.
"Isn't that stealing?" the child asked, worried.
"Yes," Coyote answered, trotting on. They ate the fox-scented salmon by a dried-up creek, slept a while, and went on.
Before long, the child smelled the sour burning smell and stopped. It was as if a huge, heavy hand had begun pushing her chest, pushing her away, and yet at the same time as if she had stepped into a strong current that drew her forward, helpless.
"Hey, getting close,"
Coyote said, and stopped to piss by a juniper stump. "Close to what?"
"Their town, see?"
She pointed to a pair of sage-spotted hills. Between them was an area of grayish blank. "I don't want to go there."
"We won't go all the way in. No way. We'll just get a little closer and look. It's fun,"
Coyote said, putting her head on one side, coaxing.
"They do all these weird things in the air."
The child hung back. Coyote became businesslike, responsible.
"We're going to be very careful," she announced. "And look out for big dogs, okay? Little dogs I can handle. Make a good lunch. Big dogs, it goes the other way. Right? Let's go, then."
Seemingly as casual and lounging as ever, but with a tense alertness in the carriage of her head and the yellow glance of her eyes, Coyote led off again, not looking back, and the child followed. All around them, the pressures increased. It was as if the air itself was pressing on them, as if time was going too fast, too hard, not flowing, but pounding, 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 faster and harder, till it buzzed like rattler's rattle.
"Hurry! You have to hurry," everything said. "There isn't time," everything said. Things rushed past, screaming and shuddering. Things turned, flashed, roared, stank, vanished.
There was a boy. He came into focus all at once, but not on the ground. He was going along a couple of inches above the ground, moving very fast, bending his legs from side to side in a kind of frenzied, swaying dance, and was gone. 20 children sat in rows in the air, all singing shrilly, and then the walls closed over them. A basket, no a pot, no a can, a garbage can, full of salmon-smelling, wonderful, no, full of stinking deer hides and rotten cabbage stalks. "Keep out of it, Coyote!"
Where was she?
"Mom?" the child called.
"Mother?"
Standing a moment at the end of an ordinary small-town street near the gas station, and the next moment in a terror of blanknesses, invisible walls, terrible smells and pressures, and the overwhelming rush of time straightforward, rolling her, helpless as a twig, in the race above a waterfall. She clung, held on, trying not to fall.
"Mother!"
Coyote was over by the big basket of salmon, approaching it, wary, but out in the open, in the full sunlight, in the full current. And a boy and a man
borne by the same current, were coming down the long sage-spotted hill behind the gas station, each with a gun, red hats, hunters. It was killing season.
Hell, will you look at that damn coyote in broad daylight, big as my wife's ass?
The man said, and cocked, aimed, shot, all as Myra screamed and ran against the enormous drowning torrent. Coyote fled past her, yelling, "Get out of here!" She turned and was borne away. Far out of sight of that place, in a little draw among low hills, they sat and breathed air in searing gasps until after a long time it came easy again.
"Mom, that was stupid,"
the child said furiously.
"Sure was," Coyote said. "But did you see all that food?"
"I'm not hungry," the child said sullenly. "Not till we get all the way away from here."
"But they're your folks," Coyote said. "All yours. Your kith and kin and cousins and kind. Bang! Pow! There's a coyote! Bang! There's my wife's ass! Pow! There's anything! Boom! Blow it away, man! Boom!"
"I want to go home," the child said.
"Not yet," said Coyote. "I gotta take a shit."
She did so, then turned to the fresh turd, leaning over it.
"It says I have to stay," she reported, smiling.
"It didn't say anything. I was listening."
"You know how to understand? You hear everything, Miss Big Ears? Hears all, sees all with her crummy gummy eye?"
"You have pine pitch eyes too. You told me so."
"That's a story," Coyote snarled. "You don't even know a story when you hear one. Look, do what you like. It's a free country. I'm hanging around here tonight. I like the action."
She sat down and began patting her hands on the dirt in a soft 4-4 rhythm and singing under her breath, one of the endless tuneless songs that kept time from running too fast, that wove the roots of trees and bushes and ferns and grass in the web, that held the stream in the stream bed and the rock in the rock's place and the earth together. And the child lay listening.
"I love you," she said.
Coyote went on singing. Sun went down the last slope of the west and left a pale green clarity over the desert hills. Coyote had stopped singing. She sniffed.
"Hey," she said, "dinner."
She got up and moseyed along the little draw.
"Yeah," she called back softly. "Come on."
Stiffly, for the fear crystals hadn't yet melted out of her joints, the child got up and went to Coyote. Off to one side along the hill was one of the lines, a fence. She didn't look at it. It was okay. They were outside it.
"Look at that."
A smoked salmon, a whole chinook, lay on a little cedar bark mat.
"An offering? Well, I'll be darned."
Coyote was so impressed she didn't even swear.
"I haven't seen one of these for years. I thought they'd forgotten."
"Offering to who?"
"Me. Who else? Boy, look at that."
The child looked dubiously at the salmon.
"It smells funny."
"How funny?"
"Like burned."
"It's smoked, stupid. Come on."
"I'm not hungry."
"Okay. It's not your salmon, anyhow. It's mine. my offering for me. Hey, you people! You people over there! Coyote thanks you! Keep it up like this, and maybe I'll do some good things for you, too.
Don't yell, Mom. They're not that far away.
They're all my people, said Coyote with a great gesture, and then sat down cross-legged, broke off a big piece of salmon, and ate. Evening star burned like a deep, bright pool of water in the clear sky. Down over the Twin Hills was a dim suffusion of light, like a fog. The child looked away from it, back at the star.
Oh, Coyote said. Oh, shit.
What's wrong?
That wasn't so smart, eating that,
Coyote said, and then held herself and began to shiver, to scream, to choke. Her eyes rolled up, her long arms and legs flew out, jerking and dancing. Foam spurted out between her clenched teeth. Her body arched tremendously backward, and the child, trying to hold her, was thrown violently off by the spasms of her limbs. The child scrambled back and held the body as it spasmed again, twitched, quivered, went still. By moonrise, Coyote was cold. Till then, there had been so much warmth under the tawny coat that the child kept thinking maybe she was alive. Maybe if she just kept holding her, keeping her warm, she would recover. She would be all right. She held her close, not looking at the black lips drawn back from the teeth, the white balls of the eyes. But when the cold came through the fur as the presence of death, the child let the slight, stiff corpse lie down on the dirt. She went nearby and dug a hole in the stony sand of the draw, a shallow pit. Coyote's people didn't bury their dead. She knew that. But her people did. She carried the small corpse to the pit, laid it down, and covered it with her blue and white bandana. It wasn't large enough. The four stiff paws stuck out. The child heaped the body over with sand and rocks, and a scurf of sagebrush and tumbleweed held down with more rocks. She also went to where the salmon had lain on the cedar mat, and finding the carcass of a lamb, heaped dirt and rocks over the poisoned thing. Then she stood up and walked away without looking back. At the top of the hill, she stood and looked across the draw toward the misty glow of the lights of the town lying in the pass between the Twin Hills. "I hope you all die in pain," she said aloud. She turned away and walked down into the desert. Chapter 5. It was Chickadee who met her on the second evening, north of Horse Butte.
"I didn't cry," the child said.
"None of us do," said Chickadee. "Come with me this way now. Come into Grandmother's house." It was underground, but very large, dark and large, and the grandmother was there at the center, at her loom. She was making a rug or blanket of the hills and the black rain and the white rain, weaving in the lightning. As they spoke, she wove.
"Hello, Chickadee. Hello, new person."
"Grandmother," Chickadee greeted her. The child said, "I'm not one of them." Grandmother's eyes were small and dim. She smiled and wove. The shuttle thrummed through the warp.
"Old person, then," said Grandmother. "You'd better go back there now, granddaughter. That's where you live."
"I lived with Coyote. She's dead. They killed her."
"Oh, don't worry about Coyote," Grandmother said, with a little huff of laughter. She gets killed all the time. The child stood still. She saw the endless weaving. Then I... Could I go back home? To her house?
I don't think it would work, Grandmother said. Do you, Chickadee?
Chickadee shook her head once, silent.
It would be dark there now, and empty, and fleas. You got outside your people's time, into our place. But I think that Coyote was taking you back, see, her way. If you go back now, you can still live with them. Isn't your father there?
The child nodded.
They've been looking for you.
They have?
Oh, yes, ever since you fell out of the sky. The man was dead, but you weren't there. They kept looking.
Serves him right.
Serves them all right, the child said. She put her hands up over her face and began to cry terribly, without tears. Go on, little one, granddaughter, Spider said. Don't be afraid. You can live well there. I'll be there too, you know. In your dreams, in your ideas, in dark corners in the basement. Don't kill me, or I'll make it rain.
I'll come around, Chickadee said. Make gardens for me. The child held her breath and clenched her hands until her sobs stopped and let her speak.
Will I ever see Coyote?
I don't know, the grandmother replied. The child accepted this. She said, after another silence,
Can I keep my eye?
Yes, you can keep your eye.
Thank you, grandmother, the child said.
She turned away then, and started up the night slope toward the next day. Ahead of her, in the air of the dawn, for a long way, a little bird flew, black-capped, light-winged.